summer. Many of you know that we raise funds on a certain day of the year in January to fund our mission works. And among other things, that money goes to funding the youth in mission efforts. And so Shay, here in a moment, will take the time to report on that effort. And if you would, at this time also, take out your attendance card and fill that out. And if you're visiting with us, take out the card that says welcome and fill that out and pass it to the center aisles, and the ushers will pick that up momentarily. Shay Brown.
Good evening. As Josh mentioned, I'll be reporting about the senior high mission trip that we took this past summer to St. Petersburg, Florida, where we held a VBS at Northside Church of Christ, June 22nd through the 30th. All of those who went on the trip, the mission team included Rachel Fuller, Rachel Byerly, Casey Byerly, Nicole Friesman, Katie Wagner, Sally Carswell, myself, and Josh Blackmer. Yes, me and Josh were the only two guys on the trip. We had it rough. Just kidding. It was a good trip, a great trip. We were very successful. It was a very successful trip, and we got a lot of encouragement out of it, and we were able to encourage a lot of the brethren in St. Petersburg. The purpose, basically, of this mission trip was to encourage, to strengthen, to edify the brethren at the Northside Church of Christ in St. Petersburg. But for us as teens, we were focusing on the teens and the children because we were conducting a VBS for them, for the children there nightly. And we'll get into more details about the VBS in just a second. But that's the purpose of this mission trip, as should be every mission trip that we go on, to proclaim the gospel to everyone that we come in contact with, Matthew 18 through 20 and Mark 16, verse 15 and 16. We left on June 22nd that night, right after school, and headed west over to St. Petersburg. Took us a little longer than we had expected through traffic and crossing that really long bridge across the Tampa Bay into St. Petersburg. But we got there and we got settled into our host homes, into the members' homes which we stayed in. And then immediately the next morning, we got up and we started door knocking. For this VBS, they wanted to make sure that plenty of people around the congregation knew about this VBS coming up that they could bring their kids to. And so that Saturday morning, the 23rd, we started door knocking, and there's just a few pictures of everyone handing out these little door hangers right here. That's what we handed out. It just had some information about the VBS and how to contact the congregation there, and so that's what we handed out. There's just the group of us getting ready to go on our very hot day of door knocking. And in all, we passed out 1,500 door hangers around the area of the church. We didn't just do it that one Saturday afternoon. We did the we passed out door hangers on Saturday, and then that Sunday we went to worship services, and then Monday, the second night of the VBS, we passed out more that morning to invite more people to come, and all around the area of the church so that everyone would know. Again, passed out 1,500, and I think it was a great success. I do remember hearing that there were those who came to the VBS and they had gotten one of those flyers. So it was a great success passing those out. And even if they didn't come to the VBS, they know more about the congregation in St. Petersburg. After we went door knocking, we started setting up our classrooms that we were going to be teaching that week. There's just some pictures of everyone setting up their classroom to get ready for the VBS. I'll have more on the theme and everything in just a minute, just showing these pictures of everyone setting up their classrooms. We had a lot of time to decorate. Before the mission trip, some of you might know that we have time to prepare for our classrooms and prepare that what we're going to do. We came here a couple Saturdays and a couple Mondays because we didn't have any school to come here and to set up in the media center. We made posters and got all the things ready that we wanted to put up, things we could put on bulletin boards in the classrooms, and the materials that we needed to do the classroom. And then that night, that Saturday night, after we door knocked, after we set up our class, we got to go over to a family of the congregation. Members of the congregation have a barbecue at their home. It was a great time of fellowship in order to meet a lot of the brethren there, a lot of the members of that congregation. So there are some pictures of us sitting around outside, talking, chatting, eating. And we got to know some of the other teens there at Northside. It was a lot of fun. See down at the bottom left there, we got to go on a boat ride out in the, I guess, intracoastal. I don't know what it's called, but we went out by the Tampa Bay area or whatever in the members' boat, and we had a good time fellowshipping with one another there. So now on to the Vacation Bible School. It's Sunday. It started on Sunday night and went into Thursday night from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock each night. The theme was Can You Dig It? Searching for Valuable Treasures in Our Hearts. It was basically having the analogy of being archaeologists and how they find treasures underground, but us searching like archaeologists in our heart and finding treasures in our hearts. We talked about and taught the kids, you know, about love and generosity and passion, mercy, tenderheartedness, humility, and all along with lessons from the Bible, like the fishers of men, the widow and her two mites, and how Jesus forgave the sinful woman. So those are just a few of the lessons that we were able to bring to those children. It was at night, different from some that we had done before, but we have done some nightly VBSs. We come in, we sing a few of the fun songs and get the kids riled up, then we have our class. Then afterwards they have a fellowship time, a time that we can sit around and talk, eat some cookies and have refreshments, and then they had a craft every night. And what was great is this congregation has about, I guess, 95 in attendance every Sunday morning, and at every night of the VBS, there was about 40 kids each night. I don't know how many adults in total there was, but there was about 40 kids each night that made up for a great, great turnout for that VBS. We did the VBS ages 2 through the teens with about 15 teens every night, and that's a great group to have with those 15 teens, considering the smallness of the congregation and the size of their youth group there. There's just some pictures coming into the VBS one night. Ages 2 through 4 were taught by members of the Northside congregation. There are some pictures there. The 5 and 6-year-olds were taught by Rachel Fuller and Rachel Byerly. There's a few pictures of their class that they taught those young 5 and 6-year-olds. First and second grade was taught by Casey Byerly, Katie Wagner, and Sally Carswell. You see that picture on the left there, that's Katie washing one of the child's feet. It was the story of how the sinful woman washed Jesus' feet, and they really acted out that story with those first and second graders. So they got a lot of hands-on experience, and it was a lot of fun for the kids in those classes. And there's the first and second grade class, again taught by Casey and Sally and Katie. Well, that picture's not coming up. I don't know why. Well, there's the class I had. I had the third and fourth graders. There was supposed to be another picture there, but I guess it didn't show up. Anyway, there's me with the two students I had the second night. That's okay. The first two nights I had a low number of students, but they told me that my class would grow and somewhere out of town, and it sure did. I had like 7 students one night, so it got up there, and our class won the Fishers of Men Award, where we got an increase in attendance one night. And I think all the classes won that award, and all the classes got the Quiet Class Award for walking quietly into the fellowship hall. And so that's the few of the awards they give out to the classes every night. There's my class, the third and fourth graders. The fifth and sixth graders were also taught by some of the members of Northside Church of Christ, and there's that fifth and sixth grade class with a good number in it every night. Singing. The singing was a lot of fun. There's special stories to this singing. We did, every night we did, you know, the good kids' songs, The Lord's Army, you know, Father Abraham, This Little Light of Mine, I've Got the Joy, Joy, Joy Down in My Heart, where? And the Noah song. But I think the most fun song of all would be the hippo song that we sing to the kids, and I'm not going to act it out for you. The pictures say enough. But I got the joy and honor of doing the hippo song. And one night I found it really exciting that the congregation chose to have the elders come up and sing the song with me for the kids. So I thought that was really great, getting up in the front with their elders and doing that hippo song. And then one night, as you see up in that top right corner. We had one night, we had the teens come up and sing it with me. So it was a great, great fun. I think the little kids liked doing it better than the teens did that night, but it was still a lot of fun. And there's a picture of me with some of the elders doing that hippo song one night. So it was a lot of fun singing with those kids and doing all those fun songs we used to sing when we were little. And here's, after every class period, we'd go into the fellowship hall and have a crafts and a break of refreshments. That was Josh's student and kid that he helped out every night. That's his designated helper every night. And then here's some more pictures of the kids doing crafts. A lot of fun. Here's some of the crafts we did. This was a little wallet that we did. You can't see it very well, but I thought I'd bring a visual anyway. We talked about the gift of a generous heart and how the widow gave her two mites, and that was all she had, and she gave freely with a humble heart and everything and a giving spirit. And so we made this little wallet to always remind us to give cheerfully to God. That was one of the crafts they made. We also made this little jar with a mirror on it, and when you look in it, there's a saying above it that says, "Mercy begins with me," and we talked about being merciful towards one another and tender-hearted. So that was just another fun craft that we got to do with the kids while we were there. Some more crafts. One night making a journal booklet. Some more crafts. Then afterwards we got to fellowship with one another, fellowship with the teens, fellowship with the members. Just have a great conversations afterwards, trying to keep up with all the kids running around everywhere. Had a great number every night of kids and adults mixed. It was a lot of very good amount. Then the last night of the VBS, they gave out VBS awards. And here's some of the kids receiving their awards. They gave out like awards for perfect attendance. That means they came every day. And they gave out awards for just coming to the VBS. So the kids were excited that they got awards for everything. And there's first and second graders showing off their awards. And so finishing off with the VBS part of the slideshow, this is the last night of the VBS where there was great, we did some singing afterwards, fellowship, and many thank yous from all of the members there, standing in a circle around the fellowship room, singing and praying with one another and saying thank you. Then down at the bottom you see the class that they did a little devotional for the adults while the kids were in the class there, so that was great. But that's the VBS portion of this mission trip. There was just that part that we conducted the VBS. That was our main goal for going there, but there were also other things that we did on the side. One day, we went in and painted their nursery that they had. It was some old colors, and that picture's not coming up either. Well, anyway, there's some more pictures of us painting the nursery and painting it a green color for them and updating that a little bit. Man, these pictures, I don't know why they're not coming up. They came up on the paper and everything, but anyways. Then a few nights of the week, we had devotionals. We went over to one of the members' house, Katie Richmond, and had a devotional at her house. We also had, the picture that's not there was one of us having a devo with youth group at the church building, but we also had a devo at her house with the kids as well. So there was devos and the other things we did during the week there. We also had some fun time that we got to get to know the youth group there. It was a great bunch of kids that we are still keeping in touch with today and we had a lot of fun with them. We had an evening of bowling that we did with them. There's a bowling alley right across the street, so we decided to have some fun with the teens there. There was real encouragement to them to have others to do stuff with. We went canoeing one morning, 3 miles, worked off all that good food that they fed us. 3 miles of paddling, but it was a lot of fun. And we took a tour of downtown St. Petersburg. We went to the pier that's on the bottom left. And you see up top is the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. I don't know if any of you have ever been over it, but it's like this huge bridge. Biggest one I've been on. It was pretty neat. And then looking out on the Tampa Bay over there. Then what we always do at the end of every mission trip is go to a theme park or something, have some fun time, and we also went with the youth group there. They came with us, and we went to Busch Gardens. We went upside down through the water. We went everywhere there that we could, and so that was a lot of fun. And here's just some pictures of a lot of the friends that we made, a lot of the friends that we're keeping in touch with still. Those pictures didn't come out either. People at the top right are the people that Josh and I stayed with. Very nice couple. There's just some more pictures of everyone. And there's the nice lady that Nicole, Rachel, and Casey stayed with while we were there. And as I close, I just want to reinstate the purpose of this trip. It was to encourage and to strengthen the brethren, focusing on the children and the teens for us. When I was thinking about what to say of how much of an encouragement it was, I got out this mission trip handbook that we get every year. Before we can go on the mission trip, we have to read it and look over it. It's our guideline for the trip. And I was thinking about of how much an encouragement was to go for us and for them. And I was reading in the back about this threefold, what they call a threefold benefit package, and how these mission trips benefit the host congregation, they benefit us as a mission team, and they benefit the church here at Palm Beach Lakes. And how it benefits the host congregation is that their teens see our teens as examples and strive to become more active. And that's really true, because those teens have become more active through us being there and through them wanting to be more active. The teen group over there was not a real active group. They didn't really do much. And through us being there and us trying to get them going, they've had their first devotional. And they've also had a youth activity that they've all done together, that they've been able to do together. And so we're just real happy about that, that they've been able to jumpstart their work in the youth group, because they don't have someone like Josh that we have that can, you know, be the youth director there. They just have a hired preacher, and so it was really good for them to get that started. And then another benefit for that congregation there is that we provide examples and Bible lessons to their young children that they were able to receive. And all members, young and old, receive hope for the future of the church, seeing young people voluntarily working today. And it's just great encouragement to that church. It's also an encouragement to us as a mission team, because we get a taste of mission work. We get to see what it's like going to these other places and working. We get to see our love for God and the church and the love for the lost world increases. And it's just all these things. We grow closer to our brothers and sisters. We grow closer to strangers that we've never met over there in St. Petersburg. And then for the brethren at Palm Beach Lakes, it's an encouragement to you to know that, and for you to receive a sense of satisfaction knowing that all of you have helped participate in this this mission trip and helped a sister congregation grow by your prayers and through giving on that Mission Sunday to this work. Hopefully it's a great encouragement and strengthening to you to know that that has happened. But even through this work, we've been an encouragement to them. I know one of the girls was trying to get her boyfriend more active in the church, and she started studying with him, and he was studying with the preacher there, and he, just a few weeks ago, got baptized into Christ, and we're very thankful for that. We've been keeping in touch with these kids. They came to Central Florida Bible Camp, a few of them. They came to the evangelism training for youth that we were able to see them again. Also, one of the girls during Central Florida Bible Camp, when she went home the Sunday after camp, she was baptized into Christ as well. And so we're very, very thankful and very strengthened by this. And also one of the girls, she was the only one in her family going to church. She was the only one attending. Her father had fallen away. And now, thankfully, through studying with him and her studying with him, he has now been restored to the church as well as her uncle. And so we're just very thankful for this mission trip and the fun time we got to have, encouraging them and being with them. And hopefully we'll have long relationships with these folks over in St. Petersburg. Here's just a few pictures for fun that I put at the end as I close. But thank you for all your support and all your prayers during our trip. And now Josh will close us off with a short little devotional
thought. I don't know about short. And I really don't know where that hat came from. I think that was doctrine. When you get to spend time with kids like this, kids, young adults, young people, it's really encouraging to see the work that they do. And I get to brag on for a little bit, so y'all can hang on for a second. But it's so encouraging to see them sacrifice their time, their summer, to do work for the Lord. And they're not doing it to get accolades. And they didn't know I was going to say this, but they did a lot of work. I mean, 1,500 door hangers. And it was hot, ladies and gentlemen. It was not cool. In the physical sense, it was not cool. But they did it, and not one of them complained about the heat. And I was prepared. I was like, if they start complaining, then you know we pack it down. But they, not one of them complained to me anyway about the heat. So they did a great job. They did a really good job. Again, Shay and all the teachers did an excellent job in encouraging them. Paul, who is a preacher there, he took me aside one night and said, "Hey, I need to talk to you for a second." And I was like, "Oh no, one of our kids did something wrong. We got something going on. We're gonna get hung before we leave. I don't know what's going on." So he pulled me aside and he said, "You know, we probably could have done our own VBS. So we probably could have done it." He said, "But what I was hoping would happen has happened 10 times over and again. It's for you to come in and breathe life into the youth and breathe life into the congregation and be an example to them and see them working." And it did. It did so much. And I'm not saying that it was just our kids. God was working there. God's will was done. But when you do God's will and congregations work together, not for glory of themselves, but to glorify God, God wins every time. And we see that happen over and over again. Every time we go on a trip, it's tears when we leave, and we got to leave them, but there's a relationship that's formed there. And it was so encouraging to see that. And it's God's will that is done. And when I wanted to think about what to talk about, how do you talk about something that was so encouraging after something like this? You talk about God's will. These young men and women did a great job. And they sacrificed their will and self to do God's will. And when I think about that, I think about Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. Whose will? If your name is Will tonight, you're going to be confused thoroughly. But whose will? Whose will is going to be done? And as was read before, Colossians chapter 1, or chapter 3, we're going to look at this chapter. So if you want to open up your Bible, just turn to Colossians chapter 3, and we'll be looking there. But as was read before, the first four chapters talks about who's the subject. Who is the subject of Colossians chapter 3? And that's who it identifies. It identifies the old will, or the old person. And then it identifies the new will that should be there as we become Christians. It identifies the God's will, Christ's will, that should be exemplary in our lives. And as was read before, Colossians chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, we see, "Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking these things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, and not on things here on earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with Him in glory." And so as we think about this, who is being identified here? Well, let's break this down. As we look at here, you have been raised up with Christ. Who has been raised up with Christ? If you look at Colossians chapter 2, verse 12. Colossians chapter 2, verse 12 says, "Having been buried with Him in baptism, in which you were also raised up with Him, through faith in the working of God who raised Him from the dead." God raised Christ from the dead, and He can raise me as well. Romans chapter 6, and verses 3 and 4. "Or do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ Jesus have been baptized into His death? Therefore we have been buried with Him through baptism into death, so that as Christ was raised up from the dead through the glory of our Father, so we too might walk in newness of life." So those who have been baptized are those who have been buried in Christ. As you look also in Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 4, "Keep seeking the things above." Keep seeking those things which are above. And that's, you know, sometimes, did your dad ever, maybe it was just me, you have the habit of just looking at the ground when you walk? You ever, you know, you have to train children to keep your head up so you don't run into people. And sometimes, you know, you got to be looking up. I more than one occasion ran into people, and maybe I've almost run you over here in the building as well, just looking down sometimes. But we need to be looking up. Be looking up. Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. "But seek first the kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." In John chapter 18, verse 36, Jesus answered and said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting, so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." So we look and seek first the kingdom of God, which is not here. I mean, the kingdom is here, but it's not of this realm. We're not destined to stay here on earth forever. We're destined to go home. The kingdom will be going home. And so that's be seeking those things which are above. Also in Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 through 4, as we define who we're talking about, these people have set your mind, or set your mind on things above. Make your mind up. Matthew chapter 16, verse 23. After Peter had rebuked Jesus about his death, you don't need to die. He took him aside and rebuked Jesus about him talking about how he needed to die. Jesus answered, but he turned to him and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are not setting your mind on God's interests, but on man's interests." Peter was thinking about perhaps self, perhaps man interest, but God's interest was for all men. But we need to set our mind on God's interest. Look at Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, verses 6 through 7. For the mind set on the flesh is death, but the mind set on the Spirit is life and peace. Because the mind set on the flesh is hostile toward God, for it does not subject itself to the law of God, for it is not even able to do so. So as we set our mind on heavenly things, we don't need to set our mind on fleshly things. Because if we set our mind on earth and we set our mind on just what pleases ourselves, then we can no longer be in subject to God and be in subject to His will. And so we need to be understanding that those in Colossians chapter 3, those who have put on the new, are those who have set their mind on things above. Also look in Colossians chapter 3, verse 3. He says, "For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God." Now this is an amazing concept. I'm hidden with Christ. We stand side by side inside of God. Do you see Josh anymore? If I'm standing by Christ in God, do you see Josh any longer? You don't see me anymore. You see God that's there. And so we have died. The I has died. Look in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 22 through 24. It says that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self, which is the likeness of God, has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. And this very literally is like unclothing the old man and setting aside, no longer going back to it, and putting on the new, something that completely covers us. We are hidden in God. We are hidden in Him, and we no longer are wearing that old person. Look in Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6, if you want, I don't know what to study on my own. One night, and you just want to study something on your own, look at Romans chapter 6. Go through Romans chapter 6 and highlight how many times the word dead, dying, death, dieth, if you're in King James. Go through and highlight how many times in Romans chapter 6 that word, or a word like it, death, is used in Romans chapter 6. Even here in this short section, Romans chapter 6, verses 5 through 11, "For if we have become unified with Him in the likeness of His death, certainly we shall also be in the likeness of His resurrection. Knowing this, that our old self was crucified with Him in order that our body of sin might be done away with, so that we would no longer be slaves to sin." And the reality is, we've got to kill the old person. We've got to kill the old man. Now, can you halfway kill something? You might feel half dead, and somebody might beat you half to death. But in reality, can you be halfway dead? You're either dead or alive, right? Sometimes we try and revive that old man. We've baptized. We've been baptized. We've made the commitment to serve God. And then we're over here serving God. Then that old man never really quite died. And just like all those zombie movies or something that you've seen, they come back to life to haunt you, and are grabbing at you and that kind of stuff. And so they're trying to pull you back into that life that you lived before, because we haven't truly died to our old self. And it's sometimes hard to kill that old man. In verse 7 he says, "For he who has died is free from sin." I want to be free from sin, kill the old man. Now, if we have died with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with Him, knowing that Christ, having raised from the dead, is never to die again. Death no longer is master over Him. For the death that He died to sin once and for all, but the life that He lives to God. Even so, consider yourselves. We need to be like Christ. We died once, and we've been raised to walk in newness of life. Even so, consider yourselves to be dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus. we need to consider ourselves our old man dead. I no longer act that way. I no longer do those things. That old man is dead. And some of us need to go home and kill the zombie that's around our ankle and take care of that issue. If we want to be truly free from sin, we need to kill the old self and kill the old man. That sounds morbid if you called your dad an old man, but we need to make sure that we kill the old person, that old self. Colossians chapter 3, verse 1 through 4 also says, those who have put on the new man, when Christ, who is our life. If you really read this slowly, Christ, who is our life. Is Christ your life? Is Christ my life? As a Christian, is Christ my life? Somebody asked you, what do you do? Oh, I'm a banker. I do this. I do that. I have a different profession. But where's your life? Where's your passion? Christ should be our life. Look in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. Now, we're going to read this. Challenge you to read it slowly and no singing, all right? Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. I've been crucified with Christ. That's me. I have been crucified with Christ. And it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So when me, myself, and I are hanging out, and me, myself are saying, where's I? I said, I died. We're hanging out with Christ now. You understand what I'm talking about? I is gone. I is dead. The will that I have is gone and replaced with God's will. But Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me. What is my motivation to kill myself, to kill the I? That sounds wrong, doesn't it? What is my motivation to kill my self-will and replace it with God's will? It is because God loved me and gave himself up for me. That's my motivation. Christ, who is our life. Look at Matthew chapter 16, verses 24 and 25. Then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself. That's again, denying the I in our lives. It's no longer my will that lives. And take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Look in John chapter 10, verse 10. What kind of life are we going to gain in Christ? Jesus says, a thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Is Jesus saying, you're going to give up your life and it's going to be the worst thing you ever did? What is he saying? You're going to have life and life more abundantly. Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 9 talks about this old will, this old self. He says, therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you also once walked when you were living in them. But now you also put them all aside. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abuse of speech, the language that's used here with abuse of speech is foul speech, filthy talking here. Abuse of speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with his practices. And so what do we need to put to death? What do we need to put to death? Fornication, uncleanliness, passion or lusts, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry. We don't bow down to a wooden image, and you've heard this from the pulpit over and over again, but we bow down to our self-will, and we bow down to what pleases our flesh, and we bow down to monetary things. It might not have eyes and a mouth, but it has a motor sometimes. It might not have eyes and a mouth, and we burn incense to it, but what does it have? It has, it's green and smells good when it's brand new. So the idolatry has shifted not to a carven image, but whatever we desire more than anything else in our lives. And so the old will is outlined here in Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 9, and we need to put it to death. But the church here in Colossae had issues. They had issues. They had put those things to death, but they still needed to put off anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language, and lying. We can sometimes kill the old man, but not go all the way through the process. We need to put away the language that shouldn't be a part of our lives. Put away that language, put away that anger and the malice and those things that are there that shouldn't define who we are as Christians. And why? Have you ever wondered why? Who asks why? I ask why all the time. Why do we have to do this? Because of the wrath of God. It's because of these things the wrath of God was poured out upon the sons of disobedience. And it's because we should have put off the old man. We should put off the old man. It should no longer be a part of who we are. And finally, in Colossians chapter 3, verses 10 through 15, we have the new will that we should have in our life. Whose will? God's will. This new image that we have. Beginning of verse 10, he says, "And having put on the new self, which is being renewed to a true knowledge, according to the image of the one who created him." A true knowledge. There's knowledge out there about who we are, right? Psychologists and all those kind of things will talk about knowledge about the self. And some of those things are good. Some of those things are helpful. But we want to know truly who we are. A true knowledge of who we should be. It's found in God. In verse 11 it says, "A renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave or freeman, but Christ is all and in all. And so as those who have been chosen by God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has complained against one another, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. And beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful." So there is what we have to put off as the old man. And God says, I'm not going to leave you unknowledged about what to put on. I'm not going to leave you without any information about what to put back on. But we are to put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiveness and love. And those things are things that grow. They start small and they grow to learn these kind of attributes. You're not born with these kind of attributes. Your child may be born looking cute, but they're not born with kindness. They're not born with humility. One of my philosophy teachers said that children, when they're born, are hedonistic little creatures. And that in reality, that's what they are. They cry when they want food, and when they want fed, and when they want their diaper changed. That's how they are. Hedonism is just pleasing the flesh. And a child, of course, wants their toy. Nobody else can have it. You know, parents understand that concept. But as we grow up, we teach them these things. They learn this concept as they're taught. We just put Josiah in school. He's been in school for a week and a half. And, you know, it's VBK program, so it's not real school, but don't tell him that. So he's there. He's playing with his new friends, Carlos and Gavin. There's a Gavin there. And Carlos... there's two Carloses. There's one Carlos is telling Josiah and other friends not to be friends with Josiah. Josiah's MO when he wants you to be his buddy is he'll walk up to you and say, "You want to be my buddy?" And all of a sudden, you're best friends. You know, if you say yes, and hey, we're best friends, we'll go play on the swing, whatever. Well, there's one Carlos individual that's telling Josiah or the other kids not to say yes to Josiah. Don't say yes to Josiah whenever he asks you to be friends. And Josiah's looking at me like, "What are you talking about me?" But you know what he said to me on the way home? He's telling me about his day. You know, I picked him up. He's sitting in the front seat of the truck with me, and we're driving home, and he's telling me about his day. He's excited. And he says, and he tells me all this, and he says, "But he's still my buddy anyway." Where'd that come from? You know, you teach him principles, and y'all are responsible, too, for teaching him in Bible class and that kind of thing. You teach him these godly principles, and that came out of a child. It wasn't there before. It had to be taught. It had to be nurtured. I was almost in tears thinking about he's already dealing with moral issues here on the playground. He's already facing peer pressure on the playground at a VPK program. We're homeschooling tomorrow. You got to start early. These kids aren't here because it just happened. These kids didn't sacrifice their summer to do the will of God because somebody said, "Oh, it's a good idea. You might get to go to Busch Gardens." It's taught in the home. The youth work that's done here, we're all a big part of it. As a family, we're training up these children. And it starts in the home. It's got to start in the home. Because if it doesn't start there, whatever's learned here is forgotten as soon as they go home. It's got to be reimbursed in the home. And these things, these things that we put on as Christians have got to be there. And why do we need to do it? Why do we need to put these things on? Because the peace of God will ruin our hearts. And we know we need that. Amen? We know we need the peace of God in a life that is not peaceful. As we are Christians, we face adversity in life. It's just how it works. Oil and water don't mix. That's just a scientific principle. Christian and world don't mix. There's going to be conflict. We need a peaceful atmosphere around us. We need peace. Where do we find it? We find it in God. Apply these things to our lives, and yes, there's going to be adversity. But if we can apply humility and we can apply these things, tender mercies and these kind of attributes in our lives, and most importantly, love, then we can understand that God's peace is here. Somebody does something to me and the world says, you should do this. But God says, I can have peace. And also, as David talked about this morning, we're one body. We work together. These things that they're dealing with in the church in Colossae was not everybody else. They had anger issues with each other. And they needed to deal with those things because we are one body. We work together. We are a cohesive unit. We work together. But I want to close with this. One word we left out in the first verse of chapter 3, a big word, if. Well, it's a small word, but it means a lot, right? When you put if there, it's kind of a qualifying statement. Colossians chapter 3, therefore, if you have been raised up with God, raised up with Christ. That means if you're a Christian, right? As we looked at these things before. If you have been buried with and raised with Him, and you are no longer the old, but the new. If you are not baptized in seeking those things which are above, then you are the old man. It's an if-then kind of situation. It's basic logic. Logic 101. If this, then that. If you are continually seeking those things which are above, if you have killed the old man, if you have done this, then you can be a Christian. You can continue to walk in what you want to be. If you want to be the new man, having a peace of God and be added to the one body, then you need to believe. If you want to have the peace of God, you need to turn to Him and you need to repent. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9. If you want this, you need to confess your Father in faith in Him. If you want this, you need to be baptized. If you want to continue to have this, we need to remain to be faithful. Kill that old man, that zombie. If this helps you imagery-wise, that zombie that's holding on to your ankle, turn around, smack him off. Get rid of that old man, all right? And turn and walk in newness of life, looking up, looking forward, hand in hand walking to heaven. You understand what I'm saying? We get there together, we help one another, and we're going home. If you want to have this kind of relationship with God, please come now as we stand together and as we sing.